Good morning, and let me begin by just saying what a pleasure it is to be with you all today, both virtually and in person. I'm very excited to be able to share with you about our work in Fredericksburg, about our ministry among Latino immigrants, and how we started our ministry, and just to really just share with you our heart today and how we work with folks. Our scripture passage this morning, I'm going to use the Contemporary English Version to read the scripture that I have chosen kind of as the text or the basis, which really forms the basis of our ministry. And that passage comes from Matthew 25, verses 35 through 36. And that is, "When I was hungry, you gave me something to eat. And when I was thirsty, you gave me something to drink. When I was a stranger, you welcomed me. And when I was naked, you gave me clothes to wear. When I was sick, you took care of me. And when I was in jail, you visited me." And then going down to verse 40, which is really important for us to think about. "Whenever you did these things for any of my people, no matter how unimportant they seemed, you did it for me." As Christopher has shared with you, we began our ministry with immigrants in Fredericksburg when we returned from Costa Rica. We went for Costa Rica in 1987, and we returned in 1999, at the end of 1999. And the community that we returned to looked very, very different. When we had left, we didn't really speak much Spanish to anybody. We didn't know a single soul that spoke Spanish in Fredericksburg, Virginia. And we were going as foreign missionaries to another country to serve Christ. When we came back in 1999, things looked very different. What had happened on much of the East Coast of the United States was an influx of Latino immigrants, mostly from Mexico and Central America. While we were serving in Central America, that region of the world had come to the East Coast, back to our home. They had come to work in construction and a whole host of other different jobs that they had not served in before. And what we heard most from Baptists in Virginia was, through the WMU had a long-standing ministry with migrants, dating back to the 50s. They knew exactly what to do with migrant workers. They fed them, they clothed them, they ministered to them throughout the months that they were working the crops. They were in the tobacco fields, they were picking tomatoes on the eastern shore. They were doing a lot of things, but they went home. They all went home eventually. But when we got here in the late 90s and 2000, what we were told by the churches is, those people aren't going home anymore, and we don't really know what to do with them if they don't go home. We know what to do with them when they stay here and they're visitors. But now they're not visitors, they're living here. What do we do with them now? I talked to a man named Ricardo, who became my friend. And as I talked to Ricardo, I told Ricardo said, "You know, I've been in the United States for about 7 years now. I left my little girls. I left a newborn, less than a year old, and I left a three-year-old. And I came to the United States to work and make money and send back. I applied, and my workplace applied for my green card. And I used to go back. I'd go back for Christmas. I'd go back and spend 3 or 4 months with my family every year while there was no work in construction in the United States, while there was no work for me because of the cold in the United States. So I'd go home and enjoy my family." And all of a sudden, the borders tightened, and immigration changed, and I couldn't go home anymore. Then I'm stuck. I'm in the United States, and it has been 7 years since I've seen my little girls. And I'm tired of waiting. I'm really tired of waiting. I've done everything the right way. I've applied for my green card, and it's taking forever. And you know, I just don't really care anymore. I want to see my kids. And so he brought his family to the United States, undocumented, while they waited out the process for the green card, knowing that it was going to become more complicated, but that's what he did. He eventually got his green card, as did the rest of his family. But he just said, that's it. The family values were so strong that he was not willing to totally abandon his family forever. So those are the things that were going on when we arrived in Fredericksburg, Virginia. We started out and looked around at the community, and we found a whole lot of human needs, just like in this passage: food, clothing, education. and we ask our families that we begin to meet, what's your biggest need? Why'd you come here? What do you need? How can we help? And many of them said, let's help with our kids. We need help with the kids. We want our kids to grow up in a healthy, good environment. We want them to have education. We want them to be good people. We want them to be good Americans. And so we began youth ministry with girls like these, with Alexis and Jerindy. And we began to take these kids to camp. We took them to Passport. We held youth groups. We created a youth group that was from kids from all kinds of faith backgrounds because they really weren't welcome in a lot of the churches. They couldn't find their place in a lot of the churches. They couldn't go on school trips because they didn't have social security numbers and they didn't have insurance. And for all of that paperwork that we have to fill out in schools for our kids to participate, many of these kids couldn't do that because they were undocumented. They were waiting on papers. We went everywhere with these kids. We provided them school supplies. We provided their families with food. And that opened doors to learn about bigger needs. And we learned about a young man named Hector. Hector and his family lived in an apartment complex. And Hector was a great soccer player. He had come here when he was 11 years old. He came to the United States from Mexico, he and his younger brother. And a neighbor had said, you know, we have some new neighbors. She was Nicaraguan, and she said, we have some new neighbors from Mexico, and I know you've helped us with school supplies for our kids. Maybe we can help our neighbors. Maybe we can help our Mexican neighbors with school supplies. And so we got introduced to Hector's family. The years passed. Every year, Hector and his brother Giovanni, they got their bag of school supplies, because a lot of our immigrant parents would get the school supply list, and they thought from their Latino context, you all know what that list looks like, right? You know what those look like when you get them from the school, and there's like 10,000 items on there and exact numbers of four or six boxes of 24 crayons that those kids have to take to school. Well, my Latino families thought they had to buy absolutely everything on that list, everything, or they were not being good American parents. And so we began the school supplies ministry to help those families understand where you go and how you buy and what the importance of those things are in the classroom to help students. You buy six boxes of crayons because they're going to be shared with everybody, not because your kid needs six boxes of crayons. So it became a process of education. Well, the years passed. Hector wanted to go to college. He had played soccer all through high school, and he was a great soccer player. But the problem was he didn't have a Social Security number. And so no one, even though he was offered scholarships, he couldn't accept any of his soccer scholarships to major universities because of a lack of papers. And so he resigned himself to going to community college. Hector ended up working a job at the Fredericksburg Field House in the kitchen, serving food and working at McDonald's. He worked his way through community college. Took him 3 years, but he was a good student. And his parents came to us 1 year and said, can you help us with food? It's Christmas time. We can't even provide food for our family this year because we have to pay Hector's tuition, his out-of-state tuition, because his two jobs haven't been able to provide the tuition. Hector finished his associate degree in business from community college, but his friend, his Nicaraguan friend, had ended up at Bluefield College in Southwest Virginia on a full-ride academic scholarship, even as an undocumented immigrant. And she met soccer players who knew Hector. And she said, wow, you know Hector? Hector ought to be here playing soccer. Let's get Hector here to play soccer. And so we began to talk to the president of the university, Dr. Olive, about a scholarship for undocumented students. And about a consideration, he said, no, wait, I can't quite do that for you, but I can promise you that any student is welcome at our Baptist University. Any student who qualifies will be considered regardless of immigration status. And so it wasn't long before Hector ended up at Bluefield College playing soccer. And here he is with his college president graduating. And it was our privilege that year to drive the 6 hours down to Bluefield and to be able to celebrate with Hector and his family on his graduation day from a four-year university. He was the first in his family to do that. An undocumented immigrant who arrived at age 11. We continued to provide school supplies to Hector throughout college. That was his care package every year, just to let him know, hey, here's where you came from. Here's where you started. Hector called me one day after he graduated from college, and he said, Miss Sue, I got a problem. And I said, okay, what is it? And he said, I need another job, and I've applied. And he said, they've told me I'm overqualified. And I said, okay, tell me a little more. And he said, for so many years, I've translated and interpreted for my parents. I've gone to doctors and dentist appointments. I've gone to everything in the world and helped them because I'm bilingual. And he said, I've seen the need in the Latino community. I've decided to go to work for the Christian Health Clinic, or for the Community Health Center. And he said, but they tell me I'm overqualified and they don't want to hire me. And I said, well, what kind of a job are you applying for, Hector? And he said, I'm going to be the front desk receptionist because immigrants who don't speak English need the first voice and the face they see to be Latino and someone who's bilingual. He served in that job for quite a few years before he felt he had done his duty and he moved on to another job. But he remembered where he came from. He remembered his roots. He wanted to serve his community, and he went on to become a board member for Lucha Ministries. We don't just provide, we go back to this passage that talks about food and clothing and drink and all of these other needs, but it's not just about the human needs. It's also about empowerment. Leticia came to us the first time as someone who was struggling in her marriage. She said, my husband, we just fight a lot. And so I sat down with the two of them. They were from Mexico, and we talked. And she said, you know, I have these problems. I yell at him. He yells at me. When I yell at him, he just goes in his room and goes back in the back bedroom and shuts the door, and he doesn't talk to me. And I said, I don't know what to do. I'm not a real great counselor. And I said, you know, have you ever tried just not yelling at him and just speaking to him in a normal voice? And she said, well, no. That really wasn't her style. And I said, well, just try this. That's your homework for 2 weeks. Just don't yell at each other. Just talk to each other. So they come back to my office, and 2 weeks later, and I said, well, how did it go? How'd the homework go? What are your issues now? Are you still fighting? No, we're fine. What do you mean you're fine? And I said, tell me what happened. And he said, well, when she doesn't yell at me, I can talk to her. Okay. And I asked her, and she said, well, I just stopped yelling at him, and we're fine. Okay. Fast forward a few years. I never saw them again. They just kind of melted into the community, and I never saw Leticia. I never saw Gregorio again. But about 10 years later, I was working in one of the schools, and someone mentioned the name Leticia. And they said, the ESOL teacher in that school said, one of my best volunteers is named Leticia, and she gathers all of the Latino parents, and she brings them. And so we're doing parent empowerment through the school and parent education through the school. It was the same Leticia. And later on, I went back and I asked her, and I said, what happened? How did you get there? And she said, well, I learned some things. I learned that it was important to serve my community. I learned that I was a person of value. And I learned that I have things to give back. And so I started serving. So she served in the schools, and pretty soon she was directing our food distribution program. She's the one who makes the food choices, who decides what kinds of foods we pick up from the food bank, who in that community is going to get food and who isn't. We started a program called Project Adelante. And Project Adelante is focused on women's empowerment. We still get food from the local churches. They provide us food, and many of the refugees within those communities, like at Fredericksburg Baptist, are involved in also in helping us to provide the foods for the families. We also have a Girl Scout program, because as we started Project Adelante and we began to work with women and teach them skills and training and how to use computers and how to do email, we discovered that they had needs and desires as well. And one of the things they said, we want our girls to grow up to be contributing members of the community. Many of them are born in the United States, but they don't exactly fit in some of the traditional programs, like Girl Scouts. That was one of the ones that was specifically mentioned. And so the mom said, could you guys help us to start a Girl Scout troop, a bilingual, bicultural Girl Scout troop that's based on Latino values, which means the whole family is involved in Girl Scouts. It doesn't mean just the girls and the mom's kind of in the background. Everybody is involved in Girl Scouts. And so in this photo, if you look real carefully, you'll see the Girl Scouts, you'll see their moms, you'll see their dads, and their little brothers. They're all part of the scouting opportunity. The troop leader promised that the girls who started in that initial program and the girls who joined Scouts and who stayed with Scouts throughout the years and completed projects, completed their silver awards, all of the different steps within Girl Scouts, they would receive a scholarship if they went to college. And so each of those girls, we now have four girls who have completed the highest level of scouting, who have gone to college, and who have gotten their $1,000 scholarships. One of them serves in the National Guard. One of them works with us in Lucha Ministries as a legal representative. It's paid off. The empowerment process has paid off. The after-school tutoring has paid off. We've seen these kids that we've invested in, like Hector, grow up and now be invested in their own communities. I'm going to switch tracks a little bit now and talk about COVID and what that really did to our ministry. It was pretty rough. When COVID began to be more prominent, we recognized early on that we worked in a community that was going to have some very unique needs. Language was a big hurdle because many in our community, if you were in a big major city, perhaps there are a lot of Latina organizations that provide interpreters or links or information. They have a better information system in the communities. But smaller towns and cities like ours lack a lot of those resources for immigrants and refugees in our communities. And Spanish is not everywhere. And then you add in the trust level. The trust level was tremendous. They don't necessarily trust. They don't necessarily trust a church. They don't necessarily trust the schools. They don't really trust anybody. And sometimes with good reason. They've been hurt. They've been discriminated against. They've been yelled at for speaking Spanish in Walmart. And so it's not a friendly place for many of our Spanish speakers in the community. And so we began to fear in COVID what was going to happen. You see here this photo of Greg, who is working together with one of his legal service clients, a young man who has DACA and who all grew up in our after-school program, who then became a tutor in the after-school program, and who's a college student. And he said, Mr. Greg, I want to help. How can I help you? And he came and began to help distribute food. The photo of the green door shows how we distributed food. We began to get more and more word from families that they had COVID. What do? We don't have family. We don't have anyone to bring us food when we're in quarantine. We don't live with people we know. We may rent a room in a house with three other families, and we can't even go out into the main room and risk exposing the other families to COVID. We need face masks. We need hand sanitizers. But mostly, we need food so that we can stay in our room and quarantine and keep everyone safe. And so we began dropping food on doorsteps. It felt kind of funny, you know, just to walk in and knock on the door and run. But that's literally what we did in a lot of cases. You would drop it on the doorstep, knock on the door and say, your food is on the step. And then I'd go back to my car. I'd stand on the curb and I would wait for them to open the door so I could wave and so that they would have a personal contact. We did that kind of ministry for a long time. And then we realized that's not all we need to be doing. We also need to make sure there is vaccine equity and that people know how to sign up to get the vaccines, those who want it. We began making online appointments We began helping them to connect to community resources. We began to help the health department know how to reach this community. We developed a WhatsApp group of only Spanish speakers of over 40, just people in the community, people who had been our clients, people who had been our friends, people who'd received help from us who had a desire to help others. And that became our major channel for reaching others. During recent times, there have been a lot of changes in our community, even more than the ones that we saw from 1987 through 99. Our population now, we see a lot in our community of asylum seekers. We hear a lot about asylum seekers and why they're coming. I liked this photo of this young man because he just looks a little lost. He's sitting on a step outside of a church in Mexico. I don't know if he's really a migrant or not. He looks like one. He had his backpack close by. He looked a little lost. He looked a little alone. But he's typical of many of the teens that we've actually seen, young people escaping gang violence in Central America. Young people who really don't want to be violent gang members. And that's why they leave. Not because they are violent or because they are bad people, but because they have such a strong sense of morals that they are committed to not being those people. I've heard stories of kids who are going to school who've been pushed down and knocked down at the street corner and kicked and beaten until the point where they want to join the gang. With commitments by gang members to say, this is going to be your everyday routine until you join up with us. I've had kids who have said, they've told me they'll rape my sister if I don't join the gang. They've threatened my parents, my mom. I have to protect my family, and the only way I can protect my family is either join the gang or leave. And so when I look into kids with a face like this, sitting on a step alone, I wonder, what is this kid's story? What happened to him to bring him to the steps of that church that day? To be sitting there alone, in ragged shoes, in his baggy jeans. Where's he going to go? He was a long ways from the border. He was in Chiapas, about as far south in Mexico as you can get. And he looked alone, and he looked scared. Today, our volunteers came into the United States, many of them, just like that. They're asylees, now with asylum. They're victims of domestic violence, both here and in their countries. They've survived a walk across Mexico, bus rides, all of the fears and the threats. But just like these three women that you see today, this kid, sitting on the church steps in southern Mexico, one day, 10 years, 15, maybe two or three, could be sitting at the table with these women as one of our volunteers, could be serving the migrant community here in the States if they're only given the love and the chance and the opportunities to thrive in the United States. They need a friendly face. They need a helping hand. Today they might need food. Tomorrow they might need a new pair of shoes. They might need a college scholarship. They might need a GED. They might just need a COVID vaccine to keep them safe at their workplace. That's what we've been trying to do for the many years that we've been in this ministry. It evolves. It changes. We'll talk more at lunch. We'll answer some questions and talk a little bit more about some of the other things that we do that I haven't mentioned today. But as we wrap up and as we think about what the Word says to us, the Bible truly is a story of migration. It truly is a story of immigrants and refugees surviving, serving. It's our challenge to us today to go back to that final verse 40 of Matthew 25, verse 40, and remember, whenever you did these things for any of my people, no matter how unimportant they seemed. You did that for me. This is the word of God. Thank you.